From visionary filmmaker Luca Guadagnino comes a new movie called Challengers, starring Zendaya, Josh O'Connor, and Mike Feist. Zendaya plays Tashi Duncan, a former tennis prodigy turned coach who transforms her husband, Art, into a world-famous Grand Slam champion. To jolt her husband out of his recent losing streak, she makes him play a challenger event, close to the lowest level of the pro tournament. Her strategy takes a turn when Art finds himself standing across a net from his former best friend and Tashi's former boyfriend, Patrick. Tensions run high as past and present collide. Tashi must ask herself, what will it cost to win? See Challengers only in theaters April 26. Get tickets now at challengersmovie.com.
When you are pioneering anything or introducing new ideas to the culture,
you get criticized.
You do?
Yeah. Did you hear about that?
I didn't find the one. I found someone I respected and we made it the one.
In a sort of longing kind of view of love, people understand each other as if by magic.
Nothing in itself is addictive on one hand. On the other hand, everything could be addictive if there's an emptiness in that person that needs to be filled.
I now know that nobody changes until they change their energy. And when you change your energy, you change your life.
I'm Gwyneth Paltrow. This is the Goop Podcast, bringing together thought leaders, culture changers, creatives, founders and CEOs, scientists, doctors, healers and seekers, here to start conversations. Because simply asking questions and listening has the power to change the way we see the world. Here we go. My guest today is the award-winning actress, producer, and director, Robin Wright. I've admired Robin's work for as long as I can remember, and I was really thrilled to finally get the chance to speak with her. Robin has just released her feature directorial debut, Land. The film is about a woman who's experienced tremendous loss and retreats to the beautiful but unforgiving wilderness to try to find a new way to live. Watching the film felt like being inside a poem. It's so moving, visually stunning, and completely took my breath away. Today we talk about making career pivots, honing your artistic vision, how we heal from trauma, and why she felt called to make a movie about human kindness. So let's get to my chat with Robin Wright.
Okay, I am so excited to talk to you on so many levels. First of all, I don't know if you know this, but basically the reason that I wanted to be an actress was when I saw you in Santa Barbara, the TV show, when I was 12 years old. I watched it every day. You were my complete obsession. You were so breathtaking and so natural. And I was like, who is this? This is like what I want to do when I grow up. I'm serious. With your fucking long hair and your amazing face and body and all of your natural behavior, I was like, I need to try to be this person.
Okay, that is one of the funniest stories of all time, because what a cheesy show.
Is it cheesy?
I don't know. One of the cheesiest. Well, and it was so popular at the time. Of course, it was just the 80s, but I just loved mostly the costumes. Come on, with the big 1980s shoulder pads, right? Everything was about shoulder pads.
But you were such a
and
revelation.
Everything was about, oh my God, that's so funny.
I swear. I swear, I have been your ardent fan since then, like since I was 12. Oh. I'm serious. I have like loved you from afar forever.
So
I was just curious, like, what was your path to being on that show, which obviously then started the rest of your amazing career, but how does one get on a soap opera?
That was one of the last auditions that I did before I said, I'm throwing in the towel. I suck. I'm never going to get anything. And I bought a ticket to Hawaii, one-way ticket to Hawaii to get on a boat and be like, cut the crudité for the crew. That was my job position. I'm just going to go do that and make some money. And as I got to Hawaii, I got the call saying you got the part on Santa Barbara that you auditioned for right before you left. And then it was, you know, you sign a 2-year contract and that's your life at NBC Studios, 16, 18 hours a day.
5 days a week, old yep. school.
And we would sometimes sleep in our dressing rooms. And NBC Studios, there's no windows except for in the front where the production people had their offices. So we were kind of in a dungeon with no real air circulation. And then we'd go down into the stage dungeon and shoot the show with 3 cameras. And I lived in Santa Monica and that was in Burbank. Why go home for 5 hours?
Wow.
So we'd sleep on our couch in our dressing rooms a lot of the time. It was insane training, I have to say.
Just in terms of getting accustomed to the rigor and the discipline of the job, and like nothing was hard after that.
Pretty much. It was almost like boot camp for acting, and also learning to work with 3 cameras at once. You had to know when to turn, when to favor camera 1, et cetera. And some actors had 15 pages of dialogue a day with monologues and crazy kind of memorization you had to have.
I never realized the live 3 camera. So you're sort of editing as you, or they're editing as they go. So the, and do you know when they're on camera 1 versus 2 versus 3?
Well, what you could see in your periphery was the red light. So you'd know if camera 3's red light would go off, you knew to go more to the left to get a profile shot for camera 1. And they were in the booth editing the show as we shot it. It was like a sports event. A little bit.
Incredible. That's amazing. Was it fun?
It was actually, but it's fun in the sense of the same way it's fun being on a series like House of Cards. You join this incredible team of people and you're around each other more than you're around your family. That becomes your family. And that was the hoot of it, is that we would have barbecues on the weekend at the makeup person's house, et cetera, and just bonded with our crew and the other actors.
Right. It's also for me anyway, it was a fun time before I had kids. I felt like I could really engage in that familial side of like shooting something. As soon as I had kids, I was like, I don't want to do this anymore. I just want to go home. And
I just want to go home. have you done a series?
No, I did a guest starring role on a show called Glee like 10 years ago.
Right.
Which I really loved. I had done a mini series when I was 19. And then I had done one TV movie. And then I did film. And then I went and did this guest starring role. And I loved doing TV because you work all day. When, you know, it's like you do a film and you're sitting in your trailer all day waiting to do anything. And in TV, it's like it's so exciting. I mean, you're just kind of like on the go. And I couldn't believe like, oh my, you're going to shoot 2 pages in half a day. Like, this is unbelievable. They're like, no, we're shooting 2 pages in 2 hours. And then another, you know, I just like the pace of it. And
the pace of it is incredible, right? It is. It's almost like being on an assembly line of acting. You're like, get in this costume. We're going to shoot it. And how many scenes you have to shoot per day. Like
crazy.
Being on this movie, the difference between just pre-production, let's just talk about that. Like prep, to have 4 weeks on this movie to prep and talk to your DP and your producers and look at locations and collaborate with the departments that are making your movie. TV, you get maybe 5-6 days to prep 1 episode.
You started directing on House of Cards.
Right.
And we're going to talk about Lan in a minute because it is so exquisite. It is so beautiful. Oh. I cried 40 times.
Thank you. I love that you were moved.
Loved it so much. It's like a poem and I want to talk to you about it, but I kind of want to understand before we talk about it, your path to directing, because you are so gifted at it. And so when did this start to brew in you, and when did you have the guts to kind of, I mean, I don't know, because you might be completely different than I am, but when I was thinking about changing, pivoting a bit and doing something different in my career. It took me like 5 years to get up the guts to even sort of say it out loud to myself. Did you always know you wanted to direct? Did you feel any trepidation about it? Like, how did you take that step from it being this internal feeling or desire to being something you said out loud to somebody?
It took a long time to make that transition of vocalizing it, right? And it was always in the recesses of my mind, like, God, one day I would love to direct. And having worked with a handful of great directors, Anthony Minghella being one of them, right? And watching that style and the grace that he had, and so intelligent. And he was a poet the way he directed actors, right? And then Fincher, right? Same thing.
He
was like, there's this other guy, talk about the other end of the spectrum, but learning from each of them as the years went by, and taking notes, like copious notes, like I love that part from that guy, I love that from that woman. And then just sort of building this little diary of, I'm gonna be able to have the confidence one day to do it. And when I got on House of Cards, it was 2 years in, I felt comfortable, I had support and security, and teachers, I had cinema teachers. Mm-hmm. Our camera operator had been shooting for over 47 years. So I learned the camera and lenses from him. We learned about lighting from our DPs. And if I hadn't had that education from that crew, I don't think I would have had the confidence to say, I'm ready to direct the show. And they actually encouraged me to do it. So I said, I think I'm ready, whispering. And they said, we got your back. We're going to be with you every step of the way. We've been doing this a lot longer than you. And they were there. They were my babysitters and my teachers.
And what is it about directing that you longed to execute, if that makes sense? Like what is the artistic expression in driving and like creating a story and a picture that moved you? What was it about it?
I think it's twofold. It's as an actor, I couldn't wait to be behind the camera to watch the evolution that actors produce in a scene where you can tell them a story without just giving them an adjective, like just be happier or be more depressed. And learning to not want to do that we've had done to us as directors. Be more depressed when you walk in the room. Well, what does that mean? It doesn't help me do anything. Give me substance and sustenance, and then let me imbue that in a take. And I couldn't wait to do that because it's what I missed a lot of the time being an actor. And then you would see, God, if I could just give that actor this note, I know they could achieve what the director wants right now, but they're getting blocked by their own cerebral mind. You know what I mean? That was one reason to want to do it. And then I loved the idea of jumping into another ship, having been in this ship of acting for almost 40 years, and going, I want to work with all the people because all the people are building this, we're all architects of this project. Not one person directs it. You work with everybody. And I love the collaboration and the creativity that comes with that. When you've got your production designer coming in and going, I've got this great idea. I was up at midnight. And you're like, that's genius. That just changed the movie and made it 100% better. Something I never would have thought of. So you're just welcoming all these ideas and the creative juices are flowing all day, every day in prep. And then everybody wants to make the best movie.
Let's take a quick break to talk about one of our partners.
Tumi has a soft side. Discover their new Acer bag collection in its pillowy pleats, satin finish, and crescent shape. Acer is the bag to carry for your 9-to-5 and the 5-to-9 plans that follow. Versatility, after all, is Tumi's signature. Shop the full Acer collection on Tumi.com or at a Tumi store near you.
Okay, let's get back to the conversation.
How many episodes of House of Cards did you direct?
I think 10.
Wow. Okay. So by the time you got to the movie, you had given yourself a full mini MBA, mini masters in directing.
I'd like to think that way. Thank you for saying that. That feels very astute.
Had you suggested that maybe in, you know, the first couple of episodes of House of Cards you were in less so that you could sort of get your feet wet, or no, were you just still starring in every episode right out of the gate?
It was still starring in every episode, but I think they did try to trim a little bit just so I could get my footing.
So you were at the inception of this, you were immediately doing two giant roles at the same time. You haven't directed anything that you haven't been in.
That's right.
Yep. How difficult is it to do those two very different things with two very different objectives at the same time?
You know, on the show, it was a very different animal because I had played that role already for 2.5 years. You just kind of snap to the character. You've been doing it for so long, it's second nature. And that created an ease to be able to go from behind the camera where you're answering all the questions that need to be answered as a director and directing the actors. And then you go, okay, just shift for 3 minutes. We're just going to go do this angle on me. And you bang out a couple of takes just the way you do your job. It's more focus. I found I needed more focus to be behind the camera, of course, because there's so much more to think about, so many more people that are involved in the decision-making process of what's your episode going to look like? What tone do you want? How many angles do you want in this scene? Do you want the camera moving? How close do you want to be on you? What does that mean to the environment and the behavior in the room with the other? You got to be thinking about those things 24 hours a day.
So intimidating. I mean, I can't imagine directing, and I certainly can't imagine directing myself in anything. Like I can't imagine having all of those plates spinning at the same time. It's extraordinary. Did you feel, but you said on House of Cards, you felt really supported by the crew, which you also presumably had known for a long, long time. And you were able to, did you feel like you were able to be brave and develop your visual style?
Yes, exactly. And what a gift, because you felt like you were home. And yes, you had your family around you supporting you and just saying, try this idea. See if that is what your visual palette is like, Robin. And that's how you start to find your original style. And it doesn't mean that I want to just stick with one style. I know directors have a lot of directors have very particular style that stand out. And I just feel like I want to dabble in other styles. Hmm. And most of that is, yes, content. Like I'd love to direct a comedy right now, just to go completely to the other end of the spectrum. But also I really want to start playing around with the camera and achieving what I envisioned in my head when I read that script and said, I want to do that project. Mm. Because it takes a lot of homework to know those lenses and know why and when to move the camera. Like I watched Eternal Sunshine of, what's it called? Spotless Mind.
Spotless Mind, yeah.
What a great film. And watching, yes, incredible writer, Charlie Kaufman, love his mind, Michel Gondry, just one of the greatest directors of all time. And Ellen Kuras, the DP, shot it. And I was just watching the way she was executing the vision of that director and that writer. Mm. And I really want to hone that skill and find something that is more true to me. Mm. What is your vision? What is your style? What's your technique or your trademark? I don't know yet. It's my baby.
Well, but it's interesting too, if you think about it from coming from the perspective of an actor, because in that incarnation, you're a chameleon, right? So you are adapting to whatever the material is and you're bringing it to life. So interesting to be an actor and to approach material from the provenance of coming from adaptability, and then thinking about, okay, no, what is my imprint on this first and foremost, as opposed to the material? It's a very interesting switch to make.
It really is. And we had to adhere to a specific style in House of Cards that David Fincher set, right? He made the template. We could only use certain lenses. We could never use handheld. We could never use Steadicam.
Of course.
A lot of demand for big wide shots, like seeing the whole White House residence and then seeing Francis and Claire walk, you know, into the shot. And it's trying to find what is your style? Like you say, adaptability. So I had to find my style, even though the style was already set of the show, and not break that wall, which I'm sure some directors come onto a show and they do, and everybody gets reined back in going, no, this is the look of our show. But I had free rein on land. And what did you want that to look like? And of course, like every movie, you always are going to, you know, even as an actor, you go, God, I wish I could have done this on this take, and I didn't get it. I didn't get that take, or I didn't get that shot, or I didn't shoot the scene the way I saw it in my head, and I knew it, and I didn't correct it. So you're kicking yourself still. Mm-hmm. And that's just, I think, just the beginnings of learning. I have so much to learn.
So thrilling and so wonderful to be able to watch somebody do this. And the movie is so beautiful, and there's such a facility. I mean, I, with the camera, and like, I felt like it was so clear what you, the story that you were trying to tell, and it was so moving, and it is so visually stunning. The scene where you're sort of making the garden and figuring out how to live off the land, and that the power of the regenerative spirit was so emblematic of what your character was going through, this incredible grief, overwhelmed by grief and inconsolable, understandably. And I loved how quiet it was, that it was, we didn't need so much explanation. Like that your direction and your performance was so strong and so clear that we could just watch this incredible story of healing through nature occur. So how did you find this movie? How were you like, yeah, that one? Or were you involved in the writing of it? Or did you read it? Or how did it land on you?
It came to me about 3 years ago. I was directing the last season of House of Cards, and this was a script that won in a contest, writers, and where they take 5,000 submissions and they pick five scripts out of the 5,000. This was one of them. And Alan Stewart, our producer, got in touch with my agent, said, can I come to Baltimore, Maryland, and have a meeting with Robin? Because I think she should direct this movie. I read it and I just loved the simplicity, the quiet, the healing aspect, and that it was all about the beauty of transformation, and that human kindness and human connectedness can pull you through, can help us heal. Mm-hmm. And at that time, 3 years ago, why it resonated so strongly was we were all experiencing and witnessing these random shootings that were going on almost biweekly. And I just was weeping every day, as I just couldn't imagine what these people were going through. How do they find their way? Everybody does it differently. And I just wanted to tell this story for that reason. This is one person's experience with grief, not claiming to understand everyone's grief and how they should heal. One person. And it is generally with the help of another. When you are faced with adversity, it is humans, other humans that help pull us through and give us faith to live.
Did you feel incredibly vulnerable and exposed? And I only ask this because, you know, in my experience on set, when you have to kind of rip your skin off and bare that deepest, most raw part of yourself, you're doing it in the kind of matrix of the director holding you and what they want. So how do you do that when it's for yourself and then you're the one adjudicating if you're doing it enough, if that makes sense?
Exactly. Yeah. Should we go again? We should go again. You have to have an incredible team of people around you. And that team is your producers that are on set. I had three female producers there every day in the dit tent watching each take. And we had had so much conversation for a year prior, what each scene should be, how I wanted to execute A, B, and C. They took notes. They knew exactly the movie we were all setting out to make. So when I was in front of the camera, I literally would just say, can everybody just clear out for a sec, get out of the cabin? And I would just be alone. And then whatever you do, I would play the song. I have music, I go to music, and then I'd get in that emotional space. And I had a walkie and I said to the AD, okay, I'm ready, bring him in. And they would come in the cabin and be very quiet. Camera was already set, lights were set. And I only wanted a couple of people in there, the necessities. You know, if the camera was moving, the DP, if it was locked off, nobody had to be in there except the boom guy and me.
Wow. So
as much as possible that we could do that in the emotional scenes, I would do. I don't know if you're the same. I'm really uncomfortable performing emotional scenes like that or getting naked, or I don't like doing it in front of the crew. I'm embarrassed. I feel awkward. I feel self-conscious.
Yes.
If I have only two people in the room, I feel like I can be more vulnerable, like you were saying, be more available to what the scene needs.
And also so beautiful to get to see the full arc of those emotions. You know, I feel like if you're editing your own work, you know what you were trying to do and you left it for us to see. It was so beautiful. I was like, everyone should be able to say like, no, leave that in. I was trying to do something like I got it right there. And you know what I mean? It was like, and it was a very powerful performance, and it was very, it felt like you felt so freed up to me to do what you were doing. It was really empowering to see, like as a woman, to understand you were able to achieve like that depth of transmitting that kind of feeling and while being at the helm of the whole thing. You know, I realized I haven't seen a movie in so long. I've been watching House of Cards and, you know, it's like I also obviously in this whole COVID year, it's not like we're going to movie theaters, and it also feels like the movie business has changed so much. And I don't know. I realized, my God, I miss this. I miss this 2 hours of letting a story unfold like this in this beautiful way where it's taking its time, but yet you're hanging on every scene. You don't get that. And it's different to television.
Yeah. Cause you know, and also you're going to have a continuation of.
Yeah.
Your questions will be answered quicker, things like that. So yeah, in this hour and a half window.
It's a meditation.
It's a meditation. And trusting that the audience will be patient, that they don't need fast food service all the time. Because no. This movie, the event, the unfathomable event, opens the movie. And then you go forward, and then it had a bunch of flashback scenes of what her life was. So I took all of that out. Let's just try. And we had many iterations in the edit because it was a Rubik's Cube. It was like, you could have that movie. And then you could also have faith in the audience that they're going to wait. And we can keep them engaged. I hope. That was my greatest fear. I don't want to watch me alone for the first 10, 15 minutes of a movie.
Oh, everybody else does. Don't worry.
But you know, where you're just like, that's going to be really boring.
No.
But our editors were fantastic, how they just trimmed all the gristle off of the steak and they just made it move like a juggernaut until act two, when there is the rescue and entering a rebirth period of this character's life. It was tricky, and they did a great job in the editing room.
Truly, because you don't, not knowing fully until the end what happened, it's like you don't need to. And then obviously we know, we make assumptions as an audience, and we know kind of what's going on. We fill in the blanks. And then when Miguel talks about his experience and you think, this is so interesting, this parallel path. So how important was the platonic part of their love? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Nicely put. I love that. The platonic part of their love. That was in the original draft of the script. And that was one of the three main reasons of wanting to do this movie, because you so rarely see that kind of connection. And it could have been written to go romantic. And people may presume as they're watching it going, oh, maybe it's going to. And when I met Damien for the first time, having seen him in that movie, A Better Life, and was so blown away by his performance, and just that guy's soul just resonated onto the screen. And I was like, he's perfect for this role. And he walked into my house to have our first meeting. And it was as if we had known each other our whole lives. That kind of connection, sometimes it's kismet. You just have it with certain people. We're like each other's long lost sibling.
Wow.
And that translates in the movie. That's exactly who we are in real life together. We giggle all the time. And it's like we're soul brother and sister. So it was on the page, but if I hadn't found him, who knows, would it have translated?
So he's really amazing in the movie.
So special.
Oh, he's so good. And I love those characters where they're clearly teachers without being didactic or dogmatic, or as like he was sort of this beautiful teacher, just kind of pulling it out of you and pulling your strength and your humanity back up to the surface and your compassion for yourself back up. And nobody talked about it. And we just saw it happen, and he really was amazing.
He was talking a lot about, because we didn't have rehearsal period. We literally had a meeting at my house for an hour and a half to talk about the script, the role, who is this character to Edie, and what are we trying to achieve at the end for that final scene at the end. But outside of that, I was so busy. He didn't get there till later. He just showed up on set, and we would do maybe a take or two of most scenes because we didn't have time. The point is, when he was talking to me about, he said, I had the tragedy in my personal life, so I know exactly what this character is going through. And I know what she has to then go through after this phase. So she's right now in phase one of just be proactive, erase yourself that was, because that person will never exist again. And you need to find a new self. And how do you do that? Everybody does it differently. She decides to go off the grid and try to survive on her own. And when you say teacher, you were talking about him being not a didactic teacher. Damien said, I really feel like less words are better. That I don't need to say very much. I just say what needs to be said. And I said, that's why he's her saint and not just a school teacher.
Yeah.
Or a teacher of nature. He's her guru, her sage, her saint. And that's a different kind of, where you look up to somebody like that, because they are reading your soul. And he was, because he went through what she went through. Exactly. And he was so patient with her and respected her wishes.
Yeah.
Such a beautiful human being.
Was that dynamic familiar to you at all? Have you had anybody like that in your life at any point that's taught you or, shown you what you were capable of in a way you didn't know?
Not as a friend, therapist.
Yeah.
One of my oldest, dearest friends has always been my mentor, but never have I had that kind of relationship where there is no need for exposition.
Right. Have you ever had like, well, it's a terrible question because I mean, we've all, but as somebody who, I lost my dad when I was 30. And so much of watching your performance was so familiar to me. And I thought, gosh, I've had to then play that a couple of times, but did you draw on anything in your life? Like, have you had grief like that? I hope not, but.
I haven't, but you know, it's interesting talking to a couple of renowned therapists before I did this movie, because I wasn't going to play the part until the last minute.
Oh, really? Who was going to play it?
Well, we'd reached out to a few girls and they were either too busy or scheduling conflict, or they had been working too much. They wanted to be a mom. Totally get it. And then we got financed really quick. And we had this very slim window in which to get it cast and get up on that mountain and start prepping. So we didn't have time to take the risk of what if we don't get it cast in 48 hours.
Wow.
So the producer said, you just do it. But in that 48 hours, I need to understand that level. Mm. All had trauma, every single one of us. And I talked to this genius doctor, Dr. James Gordon.
Yes.
Literally, you know, I'm right. So yes. He does it for a living.
Yes, he
helps
incredible.
People transform out of their pain.
Yes.
And he said, I want to do something with you. I want to get on a Zoom and I'm going to do a session with you and I want you to be Edie. And I was like, I don't know if I'm going to be able to do this. I don't quite understand because I think I'm going to fall back into me because I know therapy. I know, right? How you get sort of engulfed in that bubble you don't even know that you're in.
Yeah.
And he led me down the path of who that character was. He asked the questions that he would ask someone that had had that experience. And he had these sage advice tidbits that he would have said to somebody that had that experience. And I started weeping, Gwyneth, like that guttural where your body is responding to letting the trauma that you've been holding in. And that was mine, obviously,
of course,
right?
Of course.
You're infusing yourself through the character always anyway. And it was one of the most liberating experiences I've ever had. And I was able to intellectually and cognitively understand how to play that person without claiming to know what everybody's grief is about.
Wow, that's amazing. How did you find him?
Through my oldest, dearest friend, who is one of the writers of Land, Erin Dignam. And she adopted two girls from Sierra Leone when they were little bitty. They're now graduates of Stanford with degrees, by the way. Oh yeah. So she's an amazing human being. And she met him because they came from very traumatic environment in Sierra Leone in an orphanage. So she told me about this technique. And it's a lot of, it's body movement.
Yeah.
You are literally, right? Shaking it out of your body. Yeah. Have you done it?
I have, yeah.
Yeah.
We've done a bunch of work with him at the company. And it's actually an area that I've been really fascinated by for a long time, because especially in Western culture, we're not given language for grief or trauma, how to process it. There's no permission. There's no rubric to follow. And we end up trapping it in cells in our body. And we walk around holding all of this pain that we were sublimating and disconnected to. And I really believe that left unprocessed, it causes physical symptoms and illness and all kinds of illness. And in my own life, just trying to become as integrated as possible. Like that's my goal, right? Is just, I would like to die as integrated and true to myself as possible, having squeezed as much marrow out of life as I can. Like Walt Whitman said, like watching your movie is like reading Whitman in that way. And so I've always been really interested in the art of healing trauma and hoping to this is the other thing I love about the film, is that it's in our hands to be able to move through things if we have the bravery to do it. And we think we don't, and we watch Edie not think she does, and we see her on the verge of giving up, et cetera. But, you know, if we are brave enough, we are able to start to transmute some of that pain and turn it into wisdom and turn it into what, like, fodder for our next incarnation. It's amazing we're not given the kind of roadmap for how to do it.
And you're so right in saying it's about bravery. And it helps so much to have someone like a Dr. James Gordon, or your beautiful best friend in your life, or a Miguel, who gives you that permission and the allowance for it and the space for it to occur. Like, you don't have to rush. And there's a line in the film Land, people just want me to be better. And that's pressure. Because there's a time limit on your grief and how long you hold on to it. And when can you expunge, and how do you? And I have to do it your way. Well, it's not really, your way is not really working for me.
Some days you're fine and functioning, and then 3 years later, you're hit by a wave and you're not. It's very personal, and it's a real process.
And it's what we're all going through on one level or an extreme level in this COVID year. We don't even know what the effect will be psychologically. The people who have experienced loss during this COVID time, they know. But the children, that's what I'm thinking about. These little kids, just not socializing and mask wearing, it's going to scar very deeply. I don't want to say for life. I don't want to be that pessimistic, but 3 years from now, I think we're going to look back and really start to dissect what damage was done to our psyche and how we connect. That's why I feel like the message in this movie is so universal. It's what we all want to hear. It's a reminder of, human beings are beautiful people, and we want to help each other. That's why we're here, I feel. That's an intrinsic thing in most of us. I feel like we're all born that way.
Yeah, I agree. Absolutely agree with you.
That's why it's so funny when little kids become little liars. We were talking about this the other day. You're like, but we're all born pure and truthful and honest and direct. And we really want to be kind to people. And they're like, how does that 2.5-year-old know how to lie to me and say, mommy, I didn't have no cookies. And they ate the whole jar. How old are your kids?
My daughter's nearly 17, which I cannot believe. And my son is nearly 15.
Oh my goodness. You've got teens.
I've got full teens. How old are yours?
They're
humans, right? I've got adults.
I've got a couple of humans. Yep. They are 28 and almost 30. My eldest is almost 30. I know, it's crazy.
Where have they been with you all year? What was your COVID year? What did it look like?
Yes, we have seen each other frequently when things opened up. We'd say, okay, we feel safe. And my son has actually been working at CORE, which is his dad's organization. And they were giving out tests here in Los Angeles. And then they started to spread domestically into many other states and cities. It's just an incredible, basically it's free. You could go get tested. Now they're giving out vaccines. So he's working there on a daily basis, getting tested all the time. So I feel more comfortable hanging out with him.
Amazing. Do you all live in the same city?
We do. Yep.
Yeah. And what does your daughter do?
She is an actress and my son is an actor. They're doing the thing that they said they would never do, when they were young and they'd come to set. I'm like, God, I hate going to set. It's so boring. Yep, it is. It's boring if you're not working. It's really boring. And then they would always say to us, I would never be an actor. Well, they both are.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. Dylan, my daughter, is coming out in a movie that her dad directed and starred in. And they play father and daughter in the movie. And it's based on a true story. And it's just a powerful, powerful, you know, based on a true story. Really great. Wow. She's so good in it.
When is that coming out?
I think it's going to premiere at Cannes. I could be wrong about that. With COVID, I don't know what's happening. But, right. you know, we were in Sundance and it was virtual and we did it. We were going to have a drive-in theater experience for the premiere. And we were going to, Demi and I were going to show up on this little platform stage in front of the screen outdoors at the Rose Bowl.
Oh my God.
That and they had to cancel everybody's premiere at the last minute because of this new spike. And then we just sent it out on a link, watch it on your TV. And there was our premiere.
Well, I guess the upside of us all having become so accustomed to watching things in our homes is that I think we're able to really still conjure the experience of a film from home now.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, it's, you know, unfortunate if you only have a computer or an iPhone to watch it on, yeah. but at least you're still getting the experience
yeah.
of a story being told to you.
So both of your kids have actor, director parents. Like that's right. Was Sean helpful at all on how to do both at the same time?
He didn't with me, but you know, that's the first time he directed himself is in this movie that's coming out.
Oh gosh. I didn't realize that.
He had never been in his movies. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
I'm going to have to ask him, how was that? It's definitely more work. I'll say that.
Yeah.
Just a little bit, but it's actually easier to get in front of the camera.
Yeah.
Because we've done it longer.
Right.
We meaning the novices like me. I'm a novice director. I'm just in the beginner seat. So
you're pretty fucking good. I'll tell you.
Thank you.
I've seen a lot of movies and man, this is an exquisitely beautiful film.
Oh, Gwen, it really thank is. You so much. Thank you
it's
for
amazing.
Watching.
We've Absolutely.
Never, I've met you a few times over.
Barely. The and I've always
been 5 years.
Too starstruck to talk to you. So
I was on a red carpet or something.
Well, I know, but still it's like, you don't know the indelible impact you had on me as a young teenager. Do you know what's next? Are you reading stuff? Do you want to direct more films? Like what's next?
Would love to direct something else. I am going to direct in a couple of months, the last two episodes of season 4 of Ozark.
Oh, you know, I have not seen that show yet. I'm oh behind. God,
you have to watch it. You gotta
Is
watch
it. Great.
It's amazing.
What else? What else do I need to watch? Give me your quarantine list of musts.
The two that I got hooked on, three. That one is off the charts. Fantastic. It's even more corrupt than House of Cards, if you can imagine. And then Succession. Did you do that one?
Yes. I still have a couple left in there, but I really, really love that one too. I love
That's a really
Cousin
show.
Greg. I'm
Oh my God. Right.
How great is Cousin Greg?
Cousin Greg.
He's the reason I watch that show. I mean, it's brilliant, but I'm extra into Cousin Greg.
The other one that I just watched that was hysterical was called Flowers with Olivia Colman.
Oh.
And it's a British series. You will die. It is off the charts. But she's just incredible. She's one of my favorite of all time actors.
She's unbelievable.
Right?
Okay, I have two last really quick questions for you that I ask all my actor friends who come on my podcast. Who is the best on-screen kisser?
Kevin Costner.
Ooh, oh, that's such a good one.
I mean, it's hard. It's hard off the cuff to answer that, right? Now I'm going back going, how many men have I kissed on camera?
Anyway. A lot, Robin, a lot. Okay. And last one, and of course, you do not say who, but have you had a romance with a famous person that nobody knows about in the public eye?
Yes.
For some reason, that's my favorite question that I love to think about. Oh, who could it be? Okay, great.
Thank you. This was so much fun.
Thank you so much. Honestly,
Thank
my
you for
deepest
having me.
Congratulations. This is a work of art. And
you are such a love. I'm so moved that
really I cried. Film. I've not cried that hard in a long time. And your performance is exquisite and just your command of the camera and it's just all amazing.
Thank you for listening to my conversation with Robin Wright. Her new film, Land, is out now. I can't recommend it enough. Head to watchlandfilm.com for more. That's a wrap on today's episode. If you have a second, please rate, review, and hit subscribe if you haven't already. Don't forget to share the Goop podcast with a friend. And in the meantime, for more, you can check out goop.com/thepodcast.